May it please the Court, Lynn Nakamoto representing Appellant Roger Lay. Because Roger Lay was entitled to benefits under the severance plan at issue given a proper interpretation of its terms, he seeks reversal of the trial court's grant of summary judgment to TreeSource and the denial of his own motion for summary judgment. Absent questions of the Court concerning the second issue of the amendment of the complaint, I will focus on the Court's de novo review of the ERISA benefit plan at issue. The trial court ruled that the ERISA plan in this case consists of the restated employment agreement alone and that that agreement was unambiguous. Mr. Lay contends that the court erred on both counts. Going first to the issue of what constituted the ERISA plan in this case, the plan document should be both the restated agreement and the bankruptcy court order that was the predicate for the employment agreement issued to Mr. Lay. The company, TreeSource Industries Incorporated, a parent company, and various subsidiaries were debtors in possession in a Chapter 11 reorganization. TreeSource approached the bankruptcy court to extend and modify severance arrangements with key employees. My client, Mr. Lay, was a mill manager of a sawmill at one of the subsidiaries, Spanaway Lumber Company. The bankruptcy court issued the order with the consent of the senior secured lenders, and I refer to them as the lending syndicate, and actually representatives of TreeSource Acquisition Company, which ultimately took over the debt position of the lending syndicate and took over their position in the bankruptcy, including with respect to all of the employment agreements. So this was in mid-year, TAC, TAC, was already on board. Their attorneys reviewed the order, as did the lending syndicate and TreeSource Industries' own counsel.
As I understand it, TAC also, I don't know if it was that time or later, acquired all of the stock pursuant to the bankruptcy order. They're the sole shareholder now of TreeSource, are they not?
That's correct. As part of the reorganization plan, TAC was issued shares in TreeSource along with some cash, I think $2 million in cash, and some notes for the debt. So in essence, TAC, there was a change in control. TAC took over TreeSource Industries. And TreeSource Industries actually became a somewhat different form of company in that there were mergers of some of the subsidiaries into the reorganized TreeSource that emerged from the bankruptcy.
Well, and so TreeSource, a different company that does it. I mean, it's the same corporation.
Your Honor, it was the same corporation. I can't say.
What was being eliminated were subsidiaries, and the subsidiaries were moved up and put into the parent corporation.
Correct, through mergers. And then there was the overall second amended plan of reorganization that was approved and that permitted TreeSource to emerge from bankruptcy.
I guess what I'm sort of suggesting is that the argument that says somehow there's an acquisition here because the individual mill, I've forgotten the name of the corporation,
Spanaway,
was somehow merged into the parent company. I'm kind of at a loss as to how that tracks the language of either the agreement or the order. I think I understand your argument with regard to acquisition via the second reorganization plan, but the argument with regard to the subsidiary merger into the parent, I don't see how that triggers anything under the as I say, under either the agreement or the order.
Mr. Lay's theory is that you have a merger of Spanaway Lumber Company into the parent company. And then you have an overall reorganization. The order says that an acquirer of assets affecting the employee's place of employment, whether acquired through a purchase of assets or a merger or reorganization of the relevant debtor, that definition of an acquirer could encompass the merger of Spanaway into the parent and then the subsequent reorganization of the parent.
My problem is that Mr. Lay's employment contract, the first employment contract, clearly identified his employer as TreeSource, not Spanaway. So a merger of Spanaway into TreeSource doesn't change his employer at all.
No, but it affects his place of employment, which was the lumber mill at Spanaway.
But he was never employed, at least under either of these agreements, by the lumber mill at Spanaway. He was employed by TreeSource. And I understand the reference to affecting the particular employee's place of employment is if the company's broken up and sent off into pieces and so forth, but that's not the way that the bankruptcy court or the reorganization went. So how a merger of Spanaway Lumber into TreeSource, which already was the 100% owner of Spanaway Lumber, how that could trigger this provision, I just don't understand. It may be that it's not that I don't understand it. I hear what you say and don't accept it, but I had the feeling it seems so far off the mark that maybe I'm missing something.
Well, that is not Mr. Lay's only theory.
Okay.
So
it's probably just as well.
Okay. We presented in the trial court this idea of a two-step acquisition, where we have the reorganization of TreeSource Industries and its subsidiaries. There is an acquisition of all of the stock by TAC, and then TAC and TreeSource Industries liquidates Spanaway Lumber Company assets. If that isn't a sale of assets under both the agreement itself, standing alone, and the order plus the agreement as a combined governing plan, then we can only read that that plan in a very narrow scope as requiring an actual sale of assets. And there is no indication from the context of the agreement itself, standing alone, and particularly when you look at the agreement plus the order, that anyone was going to read the language so narrowly. The context of this was a reorganization that had dragged on for some time, where the lending syndicate was getting impatient. There were a multiplicity of possibilities for reorganization and what would happen to these employees and their various companies. And in that context, where it is undisputed that the impetus for these agreements was to get the employees to stay, key employees like Mr. Lay operating a mill that was generating revenues for the debtors, it makes no sense to view it in a very narrow, constricted way, either the agreement or alone or the agreement plus the order. And Mr. Lay certainly didn't view it that way. And so if you go back to Mr. Lay's contention that both you must read the order and the agreement as governing documents for this plan, and I believe you should.
Well, let me assume for the moment that you do and pose this question. Even the agreement as interpreted in the light of the order, or even if it incorporated the language the order said should have been in the agreement, divides the protection into two parts. You could have a broad change of conditions clause that would apply in any event. But that's not here. The change of conditions argument applies only in the second part of the provision. The first, in the event that there's been an acquisition. If TreeSource had not been acquired in some fashion, and you argue it was acquired by virtue of somebody acquiring the senior debt, if there'd been simply a reorganization and the company had survived without the de facto change in control, then it appears to me that you wouldn't have a leg to stand on, because the change of conditions provision is limited to the acquisition scenario. Do you agree with that proposition?
Yes, and I think that was the contention of in-house counsel, Mr. Bland, during his testimony.
That suggests that when you try to argue what's the intent of this agreement to give protection to the employees, didn't the employee in the ideal world want protection under any circumstance? And yet he didn't get protection under any circumstance. If there was not some kind of acquisition, then he has no protection against the change in circumstances. Protection is limited to termination, and Mr. Lay was not terminated.
If there was no acquisition, yes.
So we really have to go back to viewing the meaning of that acquisition, understanding that this agreement, even read as favorably to your client as possible, did not give him the protection he's now trying to seek in the event there was no acquisition. And why would it matter to the employee what form the acquisition took?
I think it mattered because then you would have the change in management that there was. And why Mr. Lay ultimately didn't stay with this company. Here we have a long-term employee who worked closely with the former CEO, Jess Drake, who had promised to protect the employees during this rocky period of time. And that's what Mr. Lay thought he had gotten. And then with all of the changes that ultimately emerged, events totally out of his control, his mill was closed. He was no longer the general manager of an operating mill. And I don't see the viability of TreeSource's argument that this is a question of fact for trial. Mr. Lay supervised about 100 employees, everyone, the line employees, the mill workers, everyone. And almost everyone was laid off in July. And then he stayed with the mill. He ensured that the physical assets of the company were sold at the auction. He got that prepared, and he resigned. And he was counting on 1 year of salary to carry him through into his future endeavors. So if the court is not inclined to view the order as part of the agreement, Mr. Lay does contend that the agreement itself was ambiguous on its face. Again, because the sale of assets and the definition of acquirer, or the lack of definition of acquirer in the agreement, makes it unclear how broad to read that. If, in fact, the agreement standing alone is ambiguous, then Mr. Lay should get the benefit of extrinsic evidence such as the order, which does have a broad definition of acquirer, and the benefit of the testimony of parties involved in negotiating that order, including the main attorney in the bankruptcy for the lending syndicate, who clearly understood and testified that if an employee's position disappeared in whatever fashion as a result of that bankruptcy, that he would be entitled to severance pay unless he landed a new job with the acquirer that was very similar, that really didn't materially adversely change his position. Now, I don't, perhaps I should direct my comments at this point to whether or not the order and the agreement should be considered as a plan. We have here two documents that aren't in themselves, you know, your typical ERISA plan. They don't comport with all of the technical formalities required by ERISA. And there is no reason why the court should not view both as a plan, despite the integration clause, given other cases, and the fact that both were presented with a letter to Mr. Lay when he was asked to sign that agreement. In sum, either viewing the agreement alone or viewing the agreement in order as a plan, a summary judgment in this case in favor of TreeSource was error. Plaintiff also contends that summary judgment should have been granted to him because both his interpretation, at the very least, his interpretation and TreeSource's interpretations were reasonable. And in that case, the tie is broken in favor of plaintiff. Thank you. I reserve my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Mann.
Thank you. May it please the court, Carter Mann for TreeSource Industries. Mr. Lay got exactly what he bargained for in this case. He signed this restated employment agreement that was to give him job security over a limited period of time while TreeSource was going through the uncertainty of these bankruptcy proceedings.
So did he bargain for anything?
Pardon me?
It looks like an agreement was sent to him along with the order, said please sign here in return. He signed in return. Was there any bargaining?
Well, it was the only difference between this agreement and the previous agreement he had signed was this severance provision. I mean,
So in other words, the provision that's at issue wasn't bargained for. He had the option of not signing it, but the suggestion of getting of what he bargained for suggests that there was a negotiation, and that doesn't appear to be the case in these facts.
Well, there's no evidence that there was a negotiation. There's no evidence one way or the other whether if he had wanted a change, TreeSource would have considered it. There's just nothing in the record as to that at all. What he bargained for, what he signed up for was that he would not lose his job. He wouldn't be fired and be out of work during the uncertainty of these bankruptcy proceedings. That's exactly what he got. He quit. He quit when there was still work to be done.
Well, there was more than that. I mean, what about the whole provision about good reason?
Well, Your Honor, that provision, as the district court properly held, that provision didn't apply because there were some things that had to happen in order for that language to apply.
Didn't TreeSource acquire the Spanaway Mill?
No, it didn't, Your Honor. The Spanaway Mill was merged into TreeSource Industries.
That seemed to be what's described as being an acquisition or acquirer when it's merged.
Well, the order, which is not part of the plan, says that a sale of assets could take place through a merger. That's what the order said. That language is not in the restated employment agreement.
Well, didn't the order say that in words that it shall and will be incorporated, this order?
The order was an enabling document, Your Honor. It's the case that is directly on point is the Sinelli versus Security Pacific case that we cited in our brief. That case is really on all points with what we have here and shows that the order cannot be considered in this case. In Sinelli, there was the board of directors of the company issued a resolution saying that there should be that the company shall issue a group life insurance plan, a supplemental group life insurance plan that shall provide for vesting at age 60. When the plan was enacted, the plan did not have that provision. It did not provide for vesting at age 60. It said nothing about vesting. And Mr. Cinelli was sent a letter saying, saying that we've decided to enact this plan and it's going to have vesting at age 60. But the plan itself, when it was enacted, did not have that language in it. And
was there anything he was called upon to sign or agree to at that point?
No, he didn't sign anything in that case because I at least there's no evidence in the court that he signed anything.
Yeah, I also didn't see that specifically referenced, but my inference is probably not. And I wonder if that takes that case away from this one, where in fact Mr. Lay was sent the agreement to be signed, because if he didn't sign, it's not like a benefits plan where the company says these are the benefits. He was being asked to sign this agreement, which he wasn't obligated to do, and he was being told this agreement was entered into with the approval of the court. Here's the court order for reference. So presumably he might have looked at the court order, and the court order says pretty specifically that the agreement shall contain this language, which for reasons which explain why we have the case, didn't make it into the agreement that he actually signed. So I understand the precedent you're citing, but I also think this case is somewhat different in that a party is being asked to take an action, in this case enter into the agreement, which wasn't the case in the Security Pacific precedent.
Well, in Security Pacific, Your Honor, Cinelli, in effect, did agree to it because he continued to work for the company. He, in essence, by continuing his employment, he assented to the terms of the plan.
But
because
it was important
he was
to the company to get Mr. Lay's and presumably the other key employees' assent to an agreement that bound them to stay, because the company was going through changes and was fearful of losing employees, which is not, I mean, surely any time the company announces a benefit plan, an employee can decide, well, that's not good enough for me, I'm out of here. And sometimes with insurance and so forth, it happens. But this case is a little more precise in that the employee was being asked to commit himself to stay with the company and through uncertain times. And so I understand the precedent, but it seems to me it's arguably distinguishable because in this case the employee is being asked to take action, sign the agreement, which Mr. Cinelli was not.
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Lay testified in his deposition, and this is part of the record, that he never even looked at the order. The order was sent along with the agreement because the order was necessary.
Well, it doesn't matter whether he looked at it, at least in this sense, and this, I think, distinguishes it further from Cinelli. Cinelli didn't involve a bankruptcy court's order. In other words, here, Presource couldn't enter into this agreement without the authorization of the bankruptcy court, right?
No, that was true also in Cinelli, Your Honor, because and the company couldn't enter into this, couldn't amend the plan without
all
a court order.
All that case held was, you know, those things weren't sufficient itself to compose a plan. But here, the order says specifically that debtor is authorized to enter into severance arrangements as detailed in this order. And so, at the very least, don't you look to the order if there's any ambiguity in the agreement to determine what the meaning of the words used in the agreement are?
You could do that if
because Judge Clifton says there was no negotiation between the parties.
It was just
implementation of the order.
You could do that, Your Honor, if there was ambiguity. But there was no ambiguity, as the trial court found. There was no ambiguity in the plain language of the agreement. The agreement in the trial court, I think, summarized exactly why Mr. Lay is not entitled to recover severance benefits. The trial court said, before the good reason clause applies, plaintiff must have been terminated in connection with the sale of TreeSource assets, then rehired in a comparable capacity by the acquirer of the assets. Then and only then would Lay be able to terminate his employment for good reason and claim severance benefits. Now, Mr. Lay has bent over backwards and asked the court to bend over backwards and to strain to interpret acquirer to encompass this situation where TreeSource goes through a reorganization. But it still doesn't get him there because he has to show that he was terminated and then rehired by this acquirer.
Where does it say that in either the agreement or in the order that he has to be terminated and rehired?
It says that in ER 90, which is the agreement. It says provide the general rule. The clause is Clause 3B, D, deals with termination, and the 3A deals with termination for cause. 3B deals with termination without cause. The general rule is that if TreeSource terminates Lay without cause during the term of the agreement, that he would be entitled to severance benefits. Now, there was no termination.
Well, it depends. You could say legally there's a termination, and, you know, if there was a if the TreeSource after the TAC acquisition is a new corporation, there's a termination and a right and a rehiring.
Well, the court found, Your Honor, the evidence that the evidence was that TreeSource was the same corporation. There's no authority cited for this idea that it becomes a different company. The state of Oregon issued a certification 3 weeks after the reorganization became final, certifying that TreeSource was the same company that it had been since 1983. There's just no evidence that it becomes a different entity. Also, Your Honor, again, paragraph 3B talks about a sale of assets. And the clear intent is what happens when a mill is sold. If Lay's mill was sold to someone else, what would that's what, and he lost his job as a result of that. It requires that he be terminated in connection with the sale of TreeSource assets. We've got in paragraph 5 of the agreement on ER 91, there's a successor liability provision, and that would apply if there was it could arguably apply if someone, if the ownership of the company changed or if there's an acquisition of all the stock of the company, that then this whole agreement would just become binding on the successor company. 3B is meant to deal with the situation where a particular asset is sold, the mill is sold to a competitor, and Lay loses his job as a result of that. And the competitor then rehires Lay in the same capacity.
All right, you were going to point to me where that is. I don't see anything about having to be fired and rehired.
Okay, it's in 3B. Again, Your Honor.
I'm looking at 3B.
Okay. It says, provided, the general rule is that Lay gets severance if he's fired by TreeSource without cause. That's the general rule.
Okay.
And then it creates an exception for that. The exception to the general rule is that no severance will be owed to employee if employee is terminated in connection with the sale of TreeSource assets, but is offered by the acquirer a comparable position and the acquirer assumes the agreement. So that creates.
I'm looking at the bottom of this, where the bottom of it has a whole different provision with regard to the employee himself, for good reason, terminates the employment.
But then it defines, but Your Honor, then the next sentence defines good reason. To me, good reason shall mean a material adverse change by acquirer in employee's location of employment, position, okay, responsibilities, compensation taken as a whole, and benefits. So only the good reason could only be created by actions taken by the acquirer to materially change Mr. Lay's terms and conditions.
What was the good cause that Lay was dependent on?
Pardon me?
I say, what was the good cause that Lay was depending on to invoke this provision?
Well, I think he argues that because the mill's operations were shut down and his duty shifted from running an active mill to winding down the operations of that mill, that was a material adverse change. That's his argument. I think that's a fact-based determination that if the court were to determine that he was entitled to invoke the good reason provision, that'd be a determination that would have to be made.
Well, but wasn't also that, not only that, but eventually the whole thing was shut down, right? And everybody was moved to another location?
Eventually it was. That had not happened at the time he quit.
Did he quit before that happened?
Pardon me?
I mean, he tendered his resignation before that happened?
He tendered his resignation in, I think, early September.
But everybody knew it was coming.
Everyone knew it was coming, yes, Your Honor. But it had not happened yet. And
things
fact,
were going to go to Tumwater, weren't they?
Pardon me?
And that the mill was going to, operation was going to Tumwater.
No, the mill was shut down. And the assets were sold. Some of the assets were sold. Actually, they all were sold eventually. But no acquirer hired Mr. Lay or terminated him.
Where does it say the acquirer has to hire Mr. Lay in that bottom provision where he can terminate for good reason?
Good reason is defined as a change in his if you look, Your Honor, the next to last sentence, it starts with good reason in parentheses.
Shall mean.
Good reason shall mean a material adverse change by acquirer in employee's location of employment, position, responsibilities, compensation taken as a whole, or benefits. So if he doesn't work for the acquirer, they can't. How can they change the terms and conditions of his?
The acquirer of Spanaway was the Tree Source, right?
No, Your Honor, I would argue that's not an acquisition. That's simply, they already owned it. They Spanaway was a 100% fully owned subsidiary.
Corporation.
Pardon me, Your Honor?
It was a merger, wasn't it?
It's a merger.
It was a merger, yes, but that's not an act. Tree Source already, basically what happened is the company stock became Tree Source. There was no, Tree Source already owned it. How could they have acquired its own company, its own subsidiary?
Well, if it acquirer is defined as merger or reorganization, it was both.
But even if there, for sake of argument, even if there, first of all, that issue wasn't even raised in the trial court. That argument was not raised either in the complaint. It wasn't raised in the amended complaint, and it wasn't properly raised at any stage of the proceedings in the district court. But even if that could be considered an acquisition, Lay was not terminated in connection with that acquisition. And again, the language says that no severance will be owed if employee is terminated.
Well, sure, he was
that's
terminated
the first
with,
step.
With regard to that acquisition, and they closed the plant.
But, Your Honor, he quit.
Under that provision in the agreement and in the order, where if he had good reason to do it, and he had pretty good reason. He was the plant manager, and now there's no plant.
But he was never hired. He was never hired. There was no change of employment. There was a three-step process. He has to be fired.
You say a three-step process. I don't see that in the thing. All it says is that the acquirer has to do it. And if Tree Source is defined as an acquirer, then it applies.
Well, but I'm sorry.
Let me get back to what we were talking about earlier. Now, you say Lay invoked a good cause provision, right? That gives the employee the right to terminate for good cause.
If he's entitled to rely on that provision, that's right.
Right. Well, I mean, he invoked it. Question is, did he do it, you know, validly? But his grounds for revoking it were to print were that. Right, Tree Source told everybody we're closing the mill at the end of the summer. Isn't that right? And we're going to lay everybody off.
But he was separately told that he would.
Oh, just a minute.
I'm sorry.
All right. So he's the general manager of the mill, right? So he's left, as a manager with nothing to manage. Now, isn't that a good cause?
But that's not the facts, Your Honor.
Why isn't that the fact?
Because he was told, when the notice went out to the employees that the mill was going to close, he was separately told that there was important work that he needed to do to wind down the operation.
I know that. He had to wind up, but I'm still saying, isn't it good cause that a manager's factory is closed from under him?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
You know, you're supposed to manage people. That's what you're good at.
I don't think so, Your Honor. He was in charge of managing.
Well,
he was
at the
in
very
charge
least,
of,
it's a question of fact, isn't it?
I think it is. In the trial court,
so he's entitled to go to trial on that.
Well, if the case is remanded, we would have to go to trial on that, Your Honor. But the trial court actually talked about that issue in an oral argument in the on the motion for summary judgment. And as the trial court pointed out, this was a situation where Lay entered into this agreement knowing that properties were going to be sold. The company's properties were going to be sold, and that there was going to be a winding down of operations. What he was going to do if he hadn't quit was a necessary thing, which was helping the company wind down this operation. And he was best positioned of anyone to do that, but he quit. So the company didn't get what it bargained for, what it signed up for, because he wasn't around to help wind down the operation and help Tree Source through this difficult time. And there's every reason to believe that he would have continued to be employed right through the January or December of 2002.
Well, obviously the company is better off if they can stop paying him effective January 1, 2002, as opposed to having him pay him 12 months to October 2002. So there's no question but what the company would have done, what his actual responsibilities would have been. That's the question.
Right, and it would have been a factual dispute as to whether, you know, whether that constituted...
Let me ask you to focus on the term acquirer. And in particular, except for the moment, either that the bankruptcy court order is part of the plan, or that the order being sent to Mr. Lay together with the agreement is being asked to sign, is a potential reference point or a source to inform the agreement. Because in the bankruptcy order, you've got acquirer in quotes as a defined term, albeit with something less than a precise definition. But you've got a definition that does explicitly recognize the possibility not just purchase of assets, but merger or reorganization. If, except this premise for the moment, if that definition is adopted, what's your position?
The reason that language was included, Your Honor, was in the order, was in recognition that the assets, the mill, the Spanaway mill, could have been sold off in a number of different ways. You could have a straight-out sale of assets to a third party. At the time the order was entered into, Spanaway Lumber Company was a separate corporation, so that could have merged into a third-party acquirer. There were a number of potential ways to sell those assets, and
well,
I think it was just in recognition of that.
One way is that TAC, the Trade Source Acquisition Company, took over. So that there, we've certainly got some kind of a reorganization or merger.
But that's different, Your Honor. It's a change in control. If the company, in employment agreements often have change of control provisions that trigger severance. This agreement didn't have anything. It was still the same company, as the state of Oregon affirmed after the reorganization. I see that I'm out of time. I didn't get to address our cross appeal on attorney's fees, but I'm happy to answer questions about that.
I think your papers well expressed your position.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Nakamoto.
Your Honor, a number of points. First, on this argument by TreeSource that, you know, it was still the same company. And so it makes no sense that there was this acquisition because we just still have the same TreeSource Industries. And I think that's belied by the order, because if you look at the order, it talks about, it's a focus on the acquisition of the debtor's assets. And remember, we're in a bankruptcy. And so it does make sense that you could get the parent company emerging from bankruptcy and acquiring some portions of its debtor subsidiaries, some portions being sold off to third parties. It makes perfect sense that we had an acquisition in this case, even though the entity, TreeSource Industries Incorporated, survived the bankruptcy. On Cinelli, the court was looking at differentiating this case from the circumstances there. And I think another point of differentiation is the fact that the corporate resolution in that case clearly, I mean, it was written as a recommendation. There was not even an attempt to state that it was a requirement of the officers of the company to go forward with the change in the life insurance policy. And here we have a bankruptcy court order, two debtors in possession who presumably are officers of the court acting as fiduciaries. And they represented to the bankruptcy court that they would do this. They represented to others in the bankruptcy in their disclosure statement that they would do this for their employees. It makes perfect sense that Mr. Lay should be entitled to rely on the documents themselves that were issued. Which is not to say that I'm arguing that we must show his actual reliance, but the company should be held to the standards in its own documents, including the order that it sought and received from the bankruptcy court.
How about viewing TAC as an acquirer by getting the stock pursuant to the bankruptcy order? Is that...
That was a theory, and also the merger theory, And I just want to point out to the court that the merger theory was, in fact, presented to the district court. I want to assure the court of that. And you can look at Mr. Lay's second supplemental excerpts of record, for example, at SER 32 to 33. Thank you very much. For all of these reasons, Mr. Lay respectfully requests reversal of the trial court decision in its entirety and entry of judgment for him. Thank you.
Thank both counsel for your arguments.
It,
along with all the other cases argued today, are submitted, and we are in recess until tomorrow morning. We hear cases in too many cities and too many courtrooms to keep them straight. Good.